Testing. There we go. Before I begin on the matter at hand, I know that a lot of you know that I am from New Orleans. I just want you to know my family as well, and I appreciate your prayers. You prayed that storm ever so slightly to the right, and instead people got to have a couple days off. They're really grateful. A couple years ago, I was in a worship service where the speaker of the hour was a poet. And he performed a poem that he had written that was in the voice of an aborted child to the child's mother. It was functionally a poem of condemnation. And I watched as he was delivering the poem, a woman in the building shift uncomfortably and then as discreetly as she could manage, exit the room. I followed her and I found her on a set of stairs rocking back and forth, saying, "I didn't want to." And I was able to get her some mental health help right there in real time. And I was able to stand watch and kind of pray for her and cover her during that time. But in the midst of it, I just kept thinking, it shouldn't be like this. And though in the moment, I never imagined that I would know what she felt like on the front end of her decision. In the year since, my husband and I have had two beautiful children, and after their births, I have had two times where I have been absolutely terrified that I might be pregnant. The first time, I got an emergency contraceptive from a friend, pretty quickly, because you have to take those pretty quickly, but it wreaked havoc on my body. I'm one of those women whose body does not respond well to hormonal birth control. So the second time, I just hoped to not be pregnant. I knew that my family was not ready in any way to add a third child. I was not physically ready. I was not emotionally ready. We were not financially ready. A child in the moment felt like staying behind in a hurricane. You can see that I'm not pregnant, so I ultimately, turns out, was not pregnant. I did not opt to terminate a pregnancy. But I can tell you I did just about everything I found on the internet to make sure that I wasn't pregnant, soft going to the clinic. The original pro-life movement was much more whole life than pro-life. It was based on what you should think of as womb to tomb philosophy, with the idea that life was valuable from the moment of conception until the moment of natural death. And it didn't just say no to abortion, because it was founded by white Catholics whose philosophy was grounded in something called Catholic social teaching, which not only said no to abortion, but it said no to the death penalty, to war, to euthanasia. In modern terms, it would say no to things like prison brutality, police brutality. And it wouldn't just say a list of no's. It would also say yes. Yes to things like adequate school funding and creation care and universal health care and workers' rights. But this is because the philosophy was centered in a pro-poor people way of thinking. The idea that it's wrong for us to say to a woman that she can't terminate a pregnancy if we also aren't saying yes at the government level to things like prenatal health insurance, benefits for families with kids with disabilities, streamlined adoption, aid for poor families, federally funded child care, a living wage for workers. Because the truth of the matter is, economic injustice is a major driver of abortion. Unfortunately, in the modern era, the movement has largely thrown out the economic justice baby with the bathwater, while also campaigning against two of the most logical ways to reduce the rate of abortion in the country: birth control and comprehensive sexual education. Now, it's important for you to note that Black Protestants are actually a lot more likely to think of abortion as wrong than white Catholics are. But in the early 80s, when segregationist conservatives realized that adopting an anti-abortion stance could be their key to political power, there quickly became no place where people like us could vote all of our values at the same time. But truth be told, for Black Baptists, we had largely already lost that war. You see, the Black Baptist Church could be pro-life, but it isn't, because we're afraid to talk about sex, and we're afraid to talk about unplanned pregnancies, and we are afraid to engage with politics in a way that would help us to have the power to make and maintain healthy families. When it comes to sex, we chiefly live in a place of shame. We opt for either harsh judgment, we make people stop serving in ministry when they get pregnant, and we openly gossip about who the father might be. Or we dance around issues of temptation. We opt to talk about whether or not the dance team's uniforms are too tight, rather than talking about the fact that there are people in the congregation who are actively lusting after them as they minister. Or we have these long conversations about appropriate levels of cordiality during the welcome time, instead of talking about whether or not it's okay to flirt in church. Or we take a heads in the sand approach, and we act like we don't notice when two single members start consistently arriving in the same car. Or we act like we don't notice when a member's social media feed starts to consistently become morally questionable. I have a friend who in his early 20s got the woman he was seeing pregnant. And he ultimately convinced her to and paid for her to have an abortion. And he has spent the years since feeling like he let God down, and like he let that woman down, and like he let that baby down, and like he let himself down. And I have more friends than I would care to count who in their teen years terminated a pregnancy not because they wanted to, but because their parents said they had to. Because it was more important to not have a baby than to carry the shame into the sanctuary. Or it was more important to not have a baby than to ruin the future plans they had for them. If you're in the room and that story mirrors yours, I want you to know that there's grace in this place for you. That we share in your sorrow and your complicated grief for that hard place. And there is hope on the other side of that. And honestly, a lot of people in my life who ultimately ended up in that position would not have been in a position to consider abortion in the first place if they had a real understanding of how reproduction works. A great way to learn is a comprehensive sexual education course. Maine, that state like super far away from here, has great comprehensive sexual education. It's required K through 12. It has to be medically accurate and age appropriate. It has to include information about contraceptives and about abstinence. It has to have information about healthy relationships. It has to involve communication between the parent and the child. Ohio doesn't even require sex ed, but it does require that health curriculums include information on venereal diseases. If you do opt to have it, you do have to talk about abstinence, and you have to talk about the consequences of an out-of-wedlock child and the implications of having sex before marriage. Literally, no requirements about how this thing actually works, the function of sex, or how babies are made. Ironically, I had great sex ed in Louisiana. I know we think of Louisiana as like number 50 in just about everything. And honestly, it's still number 50 in this as well. I was an outlier. I went to schools that we're doing it really, really well. And you, truth be told, might not even think that it is your kid's school's job to teach them about sex. But you also might not feel competent to do this yourself. If you are being honest, you are still learning the nitty-gritty of the birds and the bees, and you're 41 years old. So, what would it look like for the church to teach your kid about sex? Or for the church to teach you how to teach your kid about sex? Guys, this is not even a pie in the sky thing. Like, this is happening today in local churches in Columbus in real time. It is possible for us to teach basic biology and remove stigma. Our kids are behind the eight ball in the realm of mastering temptation and navigating healthy relationships, and we can't even teach them about ovulation. We owe them better than this. We can give them better than this. And we owe it not only to them, but we owe it to every married person in our congregation who has the right to a happy and healthy sex life. People didn't just not learn this in the aughts, this last decade. We really do have people in our congregation right now who are old enough to know better and don't. And the tools for understanding their bodies could set them free in a way that's holy. The church could do more. You know, the legislature has decided that we can't paint a full and beautiful picture of how sex, bodies, and relationships work in the classroom. And elected officials make choices that impact all the things that are involved in this whole life philosophy. Politicians impact every aspect of your life and every issue championed by the original pro-life movement. And they come to our congregation every election cycle and ask for your vote. What would it look like for us to make a pact with other churches that we wouldn't even allow you to be introduced unless you sat in a town hall style meeting prior to? What if you had to tell us how your plans for policy and legislation match these whole life principles? What if just showing up wasn't enough? What if we went to the area commission in the neighborhood of the church and said that we would raise their concerns as highly as we raised ours, knowing that our voice was more meaningful as this faithful voting block than theirs was? You know, we have a heritage of speaking our faith to politicians. The civil rights movement was a victory of the Black Baptist Church. And it wasn't just our victory because it happened inside of our buildings. It wasn't just coincidentally happening inside of our buildings. It was a holy movement of God in which we said that just being alive wasn't enough. Demanding the conditions for thriving is holy. And you know, we can do this without impacting our tax-exempt status, because we're not actually campaigning for particular candidates, and we're not raising money for candidates either. So, if we're really gonna be pro-life, we have to begin from a point of grace. And that's grace for people wherever they are on the journey of understanding their bodies, of living into obedience with God's word, and radical grace for the children that God gives them, regardless of their life situation. And we have to be people who are teaching our children and ourselves about our bodies. People who are preparing folks for having happy and healthy sex lives. And we have to hold our politicians accountable for the lives that they govern. You know, economic justice is a family value. Clean air is a family value. Demanding people birth children that we won't prepare a beautiful place for is broken. We'll keep sinning between now and when we go to meet Jesus. We did not become saved people and suddenly, magically, get everything right. But God does not give up on us, and he does not give us permission to give up on each other. It is the devil's job to condemn. It is the Spirit's job to convict. It is the church's job to restore. What will your role in the restoration process be? Thank you.